We're discussing campaign finance following the money in politics on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. So as midterm election spending ramps up, we look at where candidates are raising big money. Open Secrets, the nonprofit monitoring and reporting on campaign contributions, they show that more than $31 million has been raised in the race for Wisconsin's U.S. Senate seat, with $10.5 million of that for incumbent Ron Johnson. Last report filed March 31st. Join in on Tracking Money in Politics, 800-642-1234. Sheila Krumholtz is Executive Director of Open Secrets. Sheila, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Open Secrets has such a massive database trove of campaign contributions and expenditures and ways to sort and look at it. And that really allows you to dig deeply into that question. How much does money influence elections now? What can you tell us?
Yes, we certainly do have a lot of data, and we're a nonpartisan research group that tracks money at the federal and now also at the state level. So we just have hundreds of millions of data points that we try to summarize, aggregate, so that people can make sense of the money flowing into the races for candidates they'll be voting on in these primaries and the general in November. And we hope that people dive in to opensecrets.org to find out information that they can use in their political engagement.
You found that the 2020 election cycle was the most expensive in American history. What can we expect from the midterms?
You know, I think we're in for more of the same and then some. We really were taken aback, really kind of gobsmacked by the money flowing in the last cycle. Obviously, a presidential cycle always ramps up the amounts spent. And so there's kind of a two steps forward, one step back between the presidential cycles and the midterm cycles at the federal level. But never had we dreamed that we would be seeing $14.4 billion spent just at the federal level, which is more than double what had been spent in the previous presidential election cycle. So I think we're on a new path, a new trajectory in terms of money spent. And there is, obviously it won't be as much as was spent in the presidential cycle, but we're already seeing that this is, you know, expensive races is going to be one of the hallmarks of this cycle, given the trend in election spending over the years and the intensity of competition this year.
And I think the natural question is, where is all this money flowing in from? You know, who are these candidates getting their contributions from?
Well, we, as I say, we take all of this massive amount of data reported by the candidates, PACs, super PACs, party committees, and we aggregate it so that you can see where the money is coming from, looking at it by industry, by organization. And over time, it's pretty consistent that most, when you aggregate it like that, most of the money is coming from finance, insurance, and real estate. Mm. So these are the people that have perhaps more disposable income. So coming from PACs and especially from individuals giving more than $200, giving large sums of money. And then also kind of miscellaneous business, all kinds of business, large and small, tech and health are kind of three areas where we're seeing major growth in campaign contributions. Interestingly, when you look at it, including not just industry, but interest groups, retirees give the most money. In the last cycle, they gave the larger group that they are included in gave hundreds of millions of dollars, and they themselves gave let's see, they gave $664 million in the last cycle, 62% to Republicans. So it's interesting to see kind of when we break it up like that, where the money is coming from. But historically, consistently, over time, finance, insurance, and real estate, Wall Street, banks, and then especially over the last many years with healthcare reform in Congress, we've seen healthcare really skyrocket, and specifically pharmaceuticals spending a lot of money to support political campaigns.
I'm going to reintroduce you here for a moment as we talk about money in politics with Sheila Krumholz here, Executive Director of Open Secrets and that nonpartisan, nonprofit work of looking at campaign finance and where the money is flowing. You can join in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. You know, Sheila, I have a penchant for your anomaly tracker. I find it really fun to play with this tool that you kind of look at anomalies in money and politics data. And one of those is that lawmakers receiving more than 50% of their itemized contributions from out of state. And you can look by state and, you know, you can look at Wisconsin as well. But I'm wondering what these anomalies tell you.
Well, we're always, again, we're trying to help people make sense of this sea of data that shows that our elections are awash in money. And to understand when something is out of the ordinary, when something doesn't kind of line up with what typically happens. And so by illuminating kind of distinct trends, we're hoping that people can both engage in what interesting outliers we're seeing, but also potentially make sense of them, because we don't pretend to know what's going on in every race across the country. And we know that people, locally in your cities and states, they understand, they know the donors, they know the candidates, they know these names, and they know what's going on, and they might understand why there would be a sudden blip in money coming from a particular sector and going to a particular candidate, or party. So with these anomaly trackers, we're simply trying to help people.
You're putting it out there.
Yeah, we're just trying to help people engage with the data and possibly help make sense of it. Like, oh, I can tell you what happened there. So and with that, I would put in a plug that if people see an anomaly or want to see a way to look at the data, have an idea for an anomaly tracking process, we'd love to hear from them.
Well, let's take a call now. Dave joining us from Madison. Dave, hi, go ahead.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question for the guest. It involves the 2020 elections, the presidential elections, and I'm sure she's aware of what Mark Zuckerberg did in the state of Wisconsin. He rolled in with a lot of money, spent a fortune concentrating on left-leaning areas and brought out the vote. And it made a huge impact. He might very well have swung Wisconsin. My question is, what does your caller or your guest think of this? Is there legislation that might eliminate that sort of thing? That technically it was legal, but right or wrong is another question. I'm curious about your guest, her thoughts on that.
Dave, thank you. Sheila, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Understandably, there's great concern about the tech industries kind of putting their thumb on the scales in political campaigns. There was so much money pouring into online ads. And of course, this conversation really dates back to the 2016 election and the work of Cambridge Analytica and others to target focus attention of social media users on advertisements that were coming from, in many cases, untrustworthy sources. The point is, there is legislation now being considered in Congress to regulate the tech industry. Highly controversial, of course, because there is the argument that this is, you know, a First Amendment right. So the point is, certainly there is a way for citizens, and I think a need for citizens, to not just pay attention, but to weigh in on what they're seeing in their state and what they think about regulation of the tech industry. We do not lobby. We do not take a position on any particular bill other than anything relating to transparency. So if it is purely transparency, we do support making more information data about our elections transparent, because mm-hmm. we feel we can't do our job at Open Secrets, the press can't do their job, the voters ultimately cannot do their job if they have one hand tied behind their back, if they don't have access to information. So I would encourage people to take a look at the tech industry's investments in politics on our website, but also, yes, there is legislation moving in that area.
And I think Dave was driving more at that grant money that Wisconsin received in 2020 from the group called Center for Tech and Civic Life that was funded by Zuckerberg. And, you know, Wisconsin's five largest cities received this grant funding to help run the election during the pandemic. So it's not exactly money that is going, well, not exactly, not money going to a particular campaign, but going to the election system apparatus itself, which is different than campaign finance.
Yes. Sorry, I didn't.
No, that's okay. That. That's okay.
The Center for Tech and Civic Life. Yes, received a lot of money to help with election administration, calling into question for many the independence of that organization. I mean, election administration is one of the huge themes this cycle. Mm-hmm. Across the country, we're seeing battles for election administration positions that used to be kind of a sleepy backwater, you know, attended to by career nonpartisan election administrators, election administration bodies that are newly politicized. You know, officials mm-hmm. are questioned about bias, and candidates are running to replace those longtime officials with party allied administrators, raising new concerns about bias. So, people can differ on how they feel about, you know, the independence of these election administration bodies, but I can't underscore more enough the importance of these positions mm-hmm. and the importance of them being skilled and nonpartisan and independent bodies and officials.
I'll remember sleepy backwater. That terminology there. Sheila Krumholtz heads up Open Secrets campaign contributions, lobbying data analysis on money in politics. Join in on questions about election fundraising, outside donations, money from PACs. What is dark money? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're following the money in politics with help from the government transparency nonprofit Open Secrets. According to its new analysis, Democratic megadonor George Soros is currently the top individual super PAC donor for the 2022 midterms. What they call guardian angel donors contributed roughly $285 million to three dozen super PACs. Still time to campaign finance reforms you want to see. 800-642-1234. Sheila Krumholtz is Open Secrets Executive Director with us for about seven more minutes. Sheila, you know, multiple candidates for Senate and governor in Wisconsin are millionaires in their own right, could self-fund their campaigns. How does personal wealth of a candidate affect their campaigns and affect fundraising?
Yeah, that's interesting because you know, we have contribution limits on contributions to candidates, PACs and parties. So all types of contributions are limited except for candidate contributions to their own campaigns. The bad news, you know, is that if a candidate is self-funding, it raises the question for many whether you can buy a seat in Congress, or raising the question about whether this can only be the turf for wealthy people. That's the bad news. The good news is that most self-funded candidates, if that is a concern, most self-funded candidates typically lose. In terms of the gubernatorial race, you know, I think the same questions apply. Are these wealthy candidates, people who are skilled in politics? Do they have understanding of the issues facing the state? Can they relate to the everyday economic hardships of the people they hope to represent? But yes, as you said, kind of on the front end, already we've seen more than $18 million raised, $14.2 million coming from Governor Evers, with $3.4 million raised by Republican Rebecca Clefish. So millions and millions of dollars already pouring into that important race.
So I would imagine, too, with this big money, how is the need to raise big money a racial equity issue? How does that disproportionately affect people of color?
Well, because people of color are not as represented among the donors, the large donors and mega donors, mm-hmm. To our politics, one concern is that they are not being represented in the candidates who are being supported to run. And so do we truly have a representative democracy when people of color are not represented among the donors, among the candidates, among the victors, ultimately? Mm-hmm. So we are studying here the race and gender of candidates running for federal office, and also working with the Center for American Women in Politics to look at the donors and candidates running at the state level as well. Just trying to map out for people, you know, how representative is our system, and in what circumstances will women of color, people of color, raise enough money and ultimately be victorious.
Let's take another call now. Aaron in Oshkosh, you're on with Sheila Krumholtz, the Executive Director of Open Secrets.
Yes, good morning, ladies. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so I guess I have one basic point to make. Some might take it as naive, but since these people are running for an office which is a public office, all campaigning should be done on public media, public television, public radio, public websites. It's a new era. Everybody's got their smartphones and feeds, and they can find information of their own accord. But if we're going to establish a neutral, common playing field once and for all, and use those $14 billion for some greater social good to help our country out, then that is the solution, in my opinion.
Aaron, thank you for that. Sheila, what do you make of it?
You know, I think that has long been a dream of people who are concerned about money's undue or disproportionate influence in American politics. There was, for many years, decades, an effort for free TV. Of course, now with the advent of online advertising, I think we're probably not going back to just TV. If anything, we're moving very quickly to more and more of the campaigning being done online. But yeah, it does, and we don't take a position on whether, you know, campaigns should move to public media. But we do understand that people are really exercised about the billions of dollars that flow into politics and whether it has disproportionate influence over who ultimately is elected to represent us. I mean, these are our elections. And there is an increase in small donations. So we have seen a significant increase in money coming in relatively small amounts. It's not all, you know, funded by billionaires and through super PACs and dark money. But, you know, there are concerning trends, and that's what we're trying to kind of peel apart to elucidate where the real issues are. For instance, you know, the big money, the super PAC money, the unlimited contributions very often is directed at the most competitive races.
Sheila, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Sheila Krumholtz is Executive Director of Open Secrets, the nonprofit monitoring campaign contributions. We have a link to Open Secrets at WPR.org/mornings. Ahead this hour, we continue our series of conversations with Wisconsin C-suites, talking with companies that have roots in Wisconsin. Next stop is Northwestern Mutual, the insurance and financial services powerhouse headquartered in Milwaukee. News update is next on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a heads up on our coverage plans here. The U.S. House Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol plans a hearing tonight. Join in for live NPR coverage starting at 7. The committee says the hearing will present previously unseen material documenting January 6th, receive witness testimony, preview additional hearings, and provide a summary of its findings. That's NPR coverage tonight at 7 here on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. Now, we're in conversation with Wisconsin executives and their companies that have taken root here. Northwestern Mutual got its start 165 years ago in Janesville, actually, moved to Milwaukee in 1859. According to its new 2021 annual report, they saw record sales of life insurance and notched the best year of business performance in their history. Join in on life insurance business climate, the firm's ethics and sustainability practices, 800-642-1234. Ray Manista is Executive Vice President, Chief Legal and Compliance Officer, and Secretary at Northwestern Mutual. Ray, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. It's nice to be here.
Good morning. I want to start with workforce because so many companies are grappling with the great resignation, so much churn of employees coming and going. What is turnover like at Northwestern Mutual, and what is your company doing to retain people?
Well, thanks. It's a great question just to start a conversation. You know, I would go back to the beginning of the pandemic, Kate, and tell you at that time, there was a lot of uncertainty as to what we might see in terms of our business, the need for what we do, and particularly in terms of the ability to retain and attract talent. And what we saw since then were really, as you mentioned, some record results. And in fact, we've been able to grow our employee population just over the last year by almost 1,000 employees. So we have had an influx of talent at Northwestern Mutual, both in terms of our home office employees, and those are folks in Milwaukee and Franklin and in New York, but also across the country. We, as you may know, have financial advisors that help people with respect to planning and achieving financial security. We were able to recruit over the last 12 months or so, an additional 3,000 financial advisors. So we're actually bigger than we were going into the pandemic and had surprisingly strong results over that period. It is true that today there's a war for talent across the nation and across all industries. And so it just requires keen focus and really doubling down to make sure that people understand why joining our company is a strong career move and that they're joining a company that's focused on doing good by our policy owners and clients. So I think it's really about emphasizing what's unique about Northwestern Mutual in terms of attracting that new talent in a difficult labor environment. Mm-hmm. But over the last couple of years, we've really grown.
What is recruitment like in Milwaukee at home base when New York is such a hub for insurance talent?
Yeah, Milwaukee, we're doing great. You know, I think the war for talent is really acute in the tech sector, so technology. And that's what you see as companies across all industries are digitizing their businesses. They need employees who can code, those who understand data and so forth. And so that's where you see particularly acute competition for talent, including in Milwaukee. So again, we have to focus on sharing with people the really cool things we're doing as a company in terms of our strategy to both provide advice through our traditional human advisors, but the digital experience that our clients will have as they engage with us. And it's an opportunity for individuals to join us in Milwaukee to create that experience for the future. So it's a cool time to join the company, and we've been successful attracting talent.
This is kind of a multi-parter here question, but you know, your company saw record business growth, and I'm just wondering in what areas, what sectors are you seeing that growth, and how has that happened in a pandemic?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Kate. You know, as I said, at the beginning of the pandemic, our country was experiencing an extreme period of uncertainty, and we were as well. It was, not known what would come next. But what we saw in terms of what we offer, and that's really, you know, helping people plan for the future, helping people think about their long-term financial goals, thinking about how they're going to protect their loved ones, think about how they're going to plan and grow their assets. We saw that the nation really spent time reflecting on those things. And as a result, we saw a greater demand for what we do. We actually had more meetings with more people to talk about planning, financial security planning, and so forth. And so to answer your specific question, we actually saw growth across all aspects of what we do. And that's principally around protection. So think about life insurance, disability, and long-term care needs, but also what we call growing or prospering through wealth. And that's through investments. So retail securities, mutual funds, and so forth. And what we do with our clients is we help them look at both their protection needs as well as their opportunities in terms of growing their assets and creating wealth. And we plan with them toward the future. And what we saw was incredible growth in terms of the appetite for that conversation.
I'm thinking about how you have employees and people affiliated with Northwestern Mutual spread out across so many areas, and about broadband and connectivity and how that's been such an issue as people have worked from home. Are you finding these issues as your workforce has tried to go remote in some aspects?
Yeah, so we were able to essentially flip the switch to remote back on, what was it, March 15th mm-hmm. of 2020. So we made the decision on Saturday that we needed to go remote and fully remote by that Monday. So we were able to do that from a technology and infrastructure standpoint. But in terms of behavior, you know, it was an adjustment for all of us, right? It was an adjustment for employees. It was an adjustment for our financial advisors in terms of how they were going to interact with their clients. And of course, it's an adjustment for clients. What we in fact saw though, was that there were actually more meetings to discuss financial security when you talk about planning and what I described earlier. We actually had increased in terms of productivity or activity on that front. And for our employees, you know, we worked through the pandemic remotely for much of the first phase. And then over time, we have been bringing teams back to the office with more flexibility so that they have choice to be in the office certain days and working from home other days. And that, of course, depends on your job. There are some jobs that are fully remote. And in today's world, there are jobs that are going to be 100% remote. But in the main, we've been bringing our teams back and having them choose to be in the office certain days and then flex from home on other days. And that seems to be serving us quite well.
Do you think that this hybrid team type workforce is the wave of the future? Are we ever going to go back to fully in the office?
You know, it's interesting. You ask, are we ever? I'm reluctant to make predictions like that because, you know, what we saw, if you think about what we thought on March 13 at the beginning of the pandemic and how we felt about that thing 6 months later versus 12 months later, your view is radically different. So I would say for now, it's a great model because it's both providing the ability to connect people at work, which is really important from a cultural standpoint. So people understand your values, they learn from one another. I mean, I say that I worked here 24 years and after I walked back and forth to the lunchroom, I'm smarter when I get back to my desk because I talk to people in between. Mm. That's really important for our people. It's especially important for new employees. So we want to preserve that, but we also want to meet the market where it is and where people where they are, which is they want additional flexibility. So That's where the we're in a 3+ day in the office and 2 or so day hybrid by choice model at the moment. That's working well. Down the road, we'll see. I don't know how you know the country and the needs will change, but we do want to preserve that in-person element, principally because it's about culture.
Talking with Ray Minista, an executive vice president of Northwestern Mutual over law and public affairs, as we have our latest in our series of conversations with Wisconsin C-suites, with major corporate leaders here in our state. You can join in with questions, 800-642-1234. You talk about culture and values, and I want to focus in on Northwestern Mutual dedicating $20 million in venture capital for Black entrepreneurs. Wondering how this money is being used.
Sure, great question. So to provide a little context, you know, we as a company, after the killing of George Floyd, engaged in a conversation about what we could do, given our unique attributes as a company, to create sustainable change and to make sustainable impact relative to our Black and African American communities. That was an effort that was spearheaded by our leader, John Schlisky. He's our CEO. He brought a group together and asked, you know, what can we do in a sustainable way to make such an impact? And the venture fund, the $20 million venture capital fund that you mentioned, is part of that effort. So we're actually doing a number of things across a number of different dimensions to affect sustainable change. The venture fund specifically is helping to provide capital to Black and African American owned startups. We also provide mentoring and support to individuals in that space through what we call our Generator program, and that's a program where we bring in young or new business owners who could benefit from a little bit of seed money and some mentoring. So we bring them in for a period of 12 weeks and we spend time mentoring, and then they have the opportunity to earn follow-on capital, venture capital, as you suggest here. So we're trying to create an ecosystem where access to capital is enhanced relative to Black and African American business owners. And that $20 million venture fund is an example of that.
You've had some time to watch this program. Where are you at with it? How is it working?
Yeah, well, let me tell you a little bit more broadly about what we're doing. You know, we're engaged in what we call a sustained action for racial equity. Mm-hmm. And there are really four dimensions. One is around making sure that we have established a culture of belonging for everyone in our company. We're working on our talent base and diversity and inclusion. And then what you're centered on here is we're working to build financial inclusion to make sure that we address the wealth gap in ways that make sense for Northwestern Mutual, given who we are as a financial institution that has some investment expertise and so forth. And then lastly, of course, we're expanding our marketplace focus to make sure that we're serving all communities. But on this point, in addition to the $20 million, we have established a $100 million impact investment fund that is targeted to supporting these efforts. And that money is available to provide capital to Black and African American owned businesses to create sustainable change. And we're well down the path of deploying that capital, is your question. We have about $60 million of that $100 million committed today.
Northwestern Mutual Executive Vice President Ray Minista with us, responsible for the company's law and public affairs activities, overseeing philanthropic ventures. Join in on the business of insurance products in Wisconsin, on corporate citizen questions. What's on your mind about business practices? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Ray Minista here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our Wisconsin C-suite conversations today with Milwaukee-headquartered Northwestern Mutual. In 2021, they reached $34 billion in revenue topped $570 billion, with a B, in combined assets. Data from its annual report. Join in, 800-642-1234. We have Northwestern Mutual Executive Vice President Ray Minista over law, compliance, government relations, governance. He's with us for about 9 more minutes. You know, Ray, people often talk about the business climate of a place, the business climate in Wisconsin, which is really important because your company has lived that climate for 165 years. And I'm just wondering, what do you see that Wisconsin needs to do in order to make companies able to thrive here?
That's a great question, Kate. I'm glad to hear you ask that. You know, we have been here for 165 years, and it's been a great environment for our company to thrive. And so I would just start with one, I think it's important to celebrate Wisconsin because it's a great place that we know about, but others who may consider coming here may not. So we have to remember that it's a great place to work, to live, to play. We have natural resources like the Great Lakes and other lakes. It's just a wonderful place to bring your talent and to raise families and so forth. So I just like to be out front about that because I'm proud of the state. I'm proud of where we live. And I think it's not well known nationally when you're trying to recruit talent and so forth. In terms of the environment in the state, I guess I would highlight two things. You know, one, it's really important for businesses to have a predictable and fair and stable environment. And given what I do, law and public affairs, which deals with laws and regulations and sort of the business climate in that sense, it's important to have stability there. And what you see at times across the country and elsewhere is you can have volatile reactions depending upon which party is in charge or if there's shifts in power. And importantly, in Wisconsin, we have a very fair regulatory structure, and that's important to business. I think we need to just keep in mind that as we move into the future, that we need to work together to make sure that we have stability, that we don't create volatility, because unpredictability for businesses are when Wisconsin's regulatory framework is different than Illinois' or anywhere else in the country, it makes things more complex. So I think it's important for Wisconsin to be like it has been, which is stable and fair. The second thing I would highlight is the need for quality education. We have great educational institutions across the state, both at the primary and secondary levels. We need to celebrate that, but we need to double down on that. We need to make sure that we don't take for granted that quality education is the foundation for the future and the talent base for employers that are considering coming here or considering their options relative to staying here. So I would say environment needs to be stable, predictable. And secondly, that we need to have a keen focus on quality education.
I would imagine those college campuses around the state are part of that feeder system into getting all of those employees that you need for to do the business.
Absolutely. In fact, what we've been doing over the last several years, Kate, is partnering even more closely with some of our university partners. So we're trying to be intentional as a company, as we work in education and we do a lot of philanthropic and support work in Milwaukee at early ages, at high school age, and then into and through college. But as we partner on that with our university partners, we're having a conversation around what does the state need in terms of the talent base? What are the skills that we need? And what we find are very willing partners. It's a great opportunity for business and for universities in this instance to really be thoughtful about the future. And I mentioned earlier, there's a great need for technology skills, for data skills, actuarial skills, things of that nature that would be relevant to our business. And we have active dialogue with universities on how do we bring our connect talent pipeline so that the young kids that we're supporting through our philanthropic efforts can find pathways into and through those universities and then ultimately into the talent pipeline for our state, for Milwaukee, and then selfishly for Northwestern Mutual. We want to hire that talent.
Let's take a call now. Betsy, in Shorewood, you're on with Ray Minista, Executive Vice President of Northwestern Mutual. Betsy, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for letting me ask my question. Ray, as Chief Legal Officer, I was wondering if you could comment on the need for diversity and inclusion in the legal profession, and what Northwestern Mutual is doing for that.
Thanks for your question, Betsy. It's a really important question. As a company, I would start with Northwestern Mutual and then talk about law. But as a company, we recognize and have been on a focused journey for many years. We recognize that we want to reflect and need to reflect the marketplace that we serve. And as the marketplace is more diverse, we need to follow suit. And the second thing we need to do is to make sure that we have a culture where both we have a mix of different types of people so that we have diversity of thought, but also a culture where people feel included and people feel that they can come to work and be who they are. So we have a focus on mix. We have a focus on culture and inclusion, and that includes the law department and the law profession. Traditionally the law profession has been dominated by men. That has changed somewhat over the years, but that curve has not been bent by the country at large. And so we at Northwestern Mutual are keenly focused on making sure that our talent pipeline is diverse, both with respect to women and people of color. And we've been successful in trying different ways to recruit talent through things like internships, where we bring in diverse talent at the early level. We've created mentoring programs to help that talent experience different aspects of our business and then help that talent feel supported and be supported as they onboard into the company. We've done a number of things in that vein.
Betsy, thanks for the question. We have less than a minute here, but I just wanted to land on sustainability. You have the sustainability report and a first one. And what does that mean for a financial services and insurance company?
It's a really good question. Sustainability, in a word, is about the role of a company in broader society. And so traditionally, public companies, for instance, which we are not a public company, we're mutual, they focus on their shareholders. Sustainability in this conversation around social good and ESG and so forth is really around the role of a company and its broader impact on society and sustainability over time. Both sustainability of the company in terms of thinking long term and being there for the long term, which aligns quite well with who Northwestern Mutual is, but also in terms of environmental impact and things of that nature. So there's a conversation around environmental footprint for a financial services firm like ours. We're not a manufacturing company.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting question that we work on and we have to be thoughtful about. For us, we're also focused on the social impact, being a world-class citizen through philanthropy, through volunteerism, things of that nature. So sustainability is really about our role in broader society and really punctuating on the things that differentiate us in that way.
Ray, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Kate. I enjoy the conversation.
Ray Minista, Executive Vice President, Chief Legal and Compliance Officer at Northwestern Mutual. And this summer, we're scheduling a series of these conversations. You can find them at WPR.org/mornings. Connect with me on LinkedIn, by the way, to further the conversation. I'm listed under my name, Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.